Welcome back to the second hour of Leading Edge Medicine. Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umeb. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine, while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians, all while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. And now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umeb, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
Hi there, and welcome back. It's hour number two of Leading Edge Medicine. My name is Lynette Morgan, along with Dr. Jerry Mixon, Dr. Samira Umeb, and we have our special guest doctor in the studio helping us today, Dr. Laura Jimenez. So thank you and welcome to the show. If you'd like to call in with your questions, like we have had so many today, here is the number. It's a little different than what we've had the last couple of months. 206-644-6006 is the number to call. We are live in the studio. Right now, headed to Federal Way, Jeff is on the line. Hi there, Jeff.
Hello.
Good morning.
Recently diagnosed with diverticulitis or osis or whatever. I got a couple of questions about different things, but want to find out what foods to avoid.
Mm. Ah, okay. And maybe what the difference is. Dr. Jimenez, could you maybe explain what the difference is?
Diverticulosis is where there's some small pouches that they come through be pushed through the outer layer of the intestines. And these pouches can become sensitive. So there are certain foods that they do recommend that you avoid, things with seeds. And it just depends on the person. So I have had people who are very sensitive to things like strawberries and raspberries, but in general, they do say to avoid anything with small seeds or even just eating like seeds whole.
Now, I got a question regarding like flax seeds, all the seeds, because I used to eat like the chia seeds, flax, put that in my breakfast cereal, and I used to get like little stabbing needle-like pains in my left side. Yeah. Ever since I stopped eating all that, it's gone away. But can I grind up the seeds and eat them, or is it the same thing as eating them whole?
Two pieces to this. One is they don't cause the diverticulosis, just to let you know. But yes, you can grind them up, and as long as they're ground up well, they shouldn't aggravate the intestines or the diverticulosis anymore.
Now, another thing. I'm 68, and I'm getting tired of looking at the crepey skin. I pinched the back of my hand and the skin doesn't bounce back that much, and I got like the wrinkled skin underneath my arms and everything. Right. Is there anything topical I can use to get rid of that, or anything I could take supplemental wise that will help? Or is it just something I got to learn to live with? And I see all the advertisements on the TV for the crepey skin cream and all that, but I'm not crazy about that.
Those are moisturizers. The idea being that if you can get enough water into the skin, it won't crepe. The water will plump it out. But that's a very temporary, doesn't really fix the problem.
Lots of water, lots of fluids. So.
Yep. Yeah, your problem is that you're a man of some mature years. And as a consequence...
He's young. What are you talking about?
Well, I said of some mature years.
Okay.
Not quite as mature as I am.
Relative.
I mean, you know, for me anymore, anybody under 50 is a punk kid, but that's a whole different issue.
Hey.
Yep, that's how I feel.
Yeah.
if you ain't 50, you're a kid. Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, I'd recall when I left home at 17 and joined the Army, I was confident. I distinctly remember being a grown man at 17.
Yeah. You know?
And now I drive by, you know, universities and I see these children out there on the campus.
It's like, what are they doing here?
What happened to the grown-ups? I don't know.
And that's America's future.
Yeah.
There we go.
I know. On the other hand, as long as it's just us guys talking and there's no girls listening, The one great joy of getting old is there are more and more hot chicks in the world.
You know,
when I was 18, hot chicks were like, you know, between 15 and 20. And then at 25, they were like between 18 and 30. And then now in my 70s, I find hot chicks up to 60. And so, you know,
right.
your point of view is shifting with time. So
just because they're a grandma doesn't mean they're not hot.
That's right. No. So there's, you know, the world of hot chicks is expanding with my age. So I'm perfectly happy with this.
It's a good thing you said up to 60 because we're all under that age. We would,
Okay, but what's happening to you is a couple of things. Your growth hormone levels are declining. Mm-hmm. And growth hormone levels are declining, then it's getting thinner, and it's losing its elasticity. The other hormone you're losing that causes your skin to thin out is progesterone. Young men have almost as much progesterone as young women. And that progesterone has a very potent impact on skin. In fact, you can take a real progesterone cream and rub it on the skin each day for about 3 months, and you'll find the skin starts getting thicker and getting some elasticity back so that it stretches and then rebounds more
estrogen
tightly.
Will do the same.
Estrogen will do the same. But, for men, I usually use progesterone. But for women, they can use estrogen and progesterone.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes their skin much, much more attractive and smooths it out and makes it look more youthful, because those so-called sex hormones are not just for sex. Okay, you have receptors in your skin for these hormones, and the skin responds. Just like you have receptors for these in your brain, in your gut, in your muscles, in your joints. And so all of these areas respond to the hormones being put back at a more robust, youthful level.
So basically get a big gallon jug of progesterone and just smear it all over my body?
No, do not do that. Oh, my God, you did not hear that here, and please do not do that.
Well, for one thing, to get real progesterone, he'd have to have a prescription, and I doubt the doctor would write, you know, gallon quantities of it. Besides, it would be a little pricey.
And he'll have side effects.
Yes,
he will not like them.
That's right. Yeah, you know, progesterone is one of those very interesting things. When we don't have enough, bad stuff happens. Our skin thins out. Mm. We don't digest foods as well. Our prostates actually start enlarging from lack of progesterone. That's part of what's causing that benign prostatic hypertrophy. On the other hand, excess levels of progesterone will completely knock out your libido, and you'll have no interest in sexuality at all. On the other hand, if, you know, we have guys who have a spouse who is ill or injured in some way and is not capable of intercourse and actually raising their progesterone high enough will damp down his interest, and so he doesn't go through life frustrated and horny all the time. So, you know, it can be used both ways, but to protect your prostate, some progesterone is a nice thing to have. You just don't want to get the levels too high.
And well, I had the prostate issues. I had the TERP procedure done because I had the prostate issues. So,
Yep.
And that, so and, now, you know, now that, that I that was I loved that. That was great. I mean, that was the issues I was having till I had that done.
Yep.
Big relief. One more question regarding.
Sure.
I'm taking Xeralta, blood thinner, and I also take fish oil. Should I be taking the fish oil with the Xeralta? I mean, I take one at night, one during the day. Do they interact with each other or cause problems? Because a friend of mine told me, you know, they read something someplace. You know, you always hear that. But I just want to ask about fish oil and Xeralta.
Okay. It doesn't matter whether you take them together or separate. The fact is that the omega-3s do inhibit clotting to some modest degree. And in people that, you know, that don't have a clotting problem, omega-3s lower their risk of strokes and heart attacks just because it lowers the risk of clots forming. If you're on a drug like the Xarelto, on the other hand, it is also an anticoagulant. It is helping to prevent you from forming clots. So you've got two things now working to decrease clotting. You've got the omegas and the Xarelto. And it's going to depend on a couple of things. How sensitive you are to each drug. Because some people, Xarelto does a bang-up job, and some not quite so good. Right. And some people, the omega-3s, you know, the same dose, one guy will get a big response, and the other guy will get almost no responses when it comes to the clotting times. Mm-hmm. So, yes, the two together do raise your risk of bleeding slightly. But if you're not having bruising problems when you get bumped, you're probably not in trouble.
So keep taking both of them then.
I took them both for that brief period when I had to take the Eliquist. So, yeah.
Yeah, because I don't bruise when I get hit. I don't bleed. So
yeah, if you're not having bleeding and bruising problems, you're probably just fine.
Okay. All right, then. That's it for me. You all have a good day. Thank you.
Okay. Take care, sir.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Take care.
All right. We have time to at least grab our question from our next caller. Then we'll take a break and then come back with hopefully some information and some answers. Okay. We are going to go now to Richard. Richard is calling for us from Naples.
Hello.
Hi there, Richard.
Hello.
Hi.
How can we help?
Yes, my daughter had breast cancer when at age 50, about a year and a half ago. I had a clear mammogram, but I recently read in a newsletter about a substance called Pawpaw, P-A-W, that allegedly is 300 times more effective than the standard treatment for breast cancer. I was wondering if you'd ever heard of it, know anything about it.
Mm. Okay. Yes, I've heard of it. I know very little about it, but we can chat about it when we come back from our break, okay?
Yep, we'll take a quick break. And Richard, you stay right there. We've got all the doctors jumping on their laptops at this very moment to find some information for you. If you have a question for us, would like to be part of the show, this is Leading Edge Medicine, and our number is 206-644-6006. Back with Richard, and then we'll talk with Chris. Oh, and we have James calling in from halfway around the world. We'll be back in just a moment. Stay right there. Medicine, so glad to have you part of our show today. And I will give that number again, 206-644-6006. Better do that again. I had a lot of extra fours. 206-644-6006. Talking with Richard on the line about the breast cancer treatment options. Okay, so the doctors were busily looking at their laptops. What did you find out about Pawpaw?
Well, the question I had was, you know, what is the state of the art? I mean, pawpaw is a fruit that's been around for a long time, okay? Mm-hmm. But, in fact, it is one of the few common fruits that are native to North America.
Okay. Wasn't there a song, Picking Up Pawpaws, Put Them in Your Pocket, mm-hmm, or something?
Yes.
Mm. Yeah. That's the only time I had heard of that.
But, apparently, there has been recent publication of a study in which an extract, an enzymatic extract in cell cultures, breast cancer cell cultures, inhibited growth. But
I'm
not aware of any human intact people studies that have shown that as yet. So
I see.
You know, there is a, I'm not quite sure how to put this politely, there is a tendency among some to take cell cultures, which are you know, we take a tumor cell, we grind it up, we isolate the individual cells, we grow those in the lab, and we see things that will affect the growth of that tumor in the lab or kill the tumor in the lab, and jump to the conclusion that intact human beings will react the same way. And if that were the case, we'd have cured all of humans' cancers many decades ago, because we got all kinds of stuff that works in the lab, very few that are that effective in human beings.
Wow.
So you don't find any human studies at all of pawpaw, I see?
Not on breast cancer, no. I mean, they are rich in a variety of vitamins, you know, and a lot of minerals. So they're a nutritious fruit.
Yeah.
But I would not put it down as a cancer fighter at this point.
Yeah. In fact, okay. You know, cruciferous vegetables are probably more documented in cancer prevention, mm-hmm. not in treatment, though.
That's right.
And in fact, if, you know, your daughter is going to go through chemotherapy or something like that, they might even discourage her to use certain things that would interfere with the chemotherapy, unfortunately.
No, she has already been through 24 weeks and gotten a clear mammogram. We hope that will persist for years. Thank you very much for the
good.
You're welcome.
Appreciate
you know,
it.
You're welcome. Sorry we couldn't help you much, but the only thing I will say is for cancer, just a good active lifestyle.
Okay, and now that she's on the other side of this, to continue.
For instance, one of the simplest things for breast cancer is daily exercise.
Yeah.
Women who, after their diagnosis of breast cancer, take up a daily exercise program have 25% better survival than women that don't exercise.
Mm-hmm. So, I'll make that point to her. It seems to me that she's on some anti-hormone treatment. I mean,
she's probably on estrogen blocker.
Estrogen has been blocked out, zeroed out.
Right.
Yes.
That's
a mixed blessing. You know, it does some good things. Yeah, it does
sure
some bad
is.
Things.
Right.
Yeah. You know, the good news is that statistically it lowers the risk of reoccurrence of her tumor. The bad news is that it will age her skin and her brain much faster.
Right. Sadly.
She will develop, you know, menopausal symptoms and cognitive issues and
night sweats.
What does your clinic do for that? What does your clinic, how do you handle that situation in your clinic
Yes, we do. We have a fair number of women that are, you know, that are breast cancer survivors. Mm-hmm. Interestingly, we keep our women on estrogen and progesterone before they ever get a cancer. And our incidence of breast cancer in the clinic is quite low.
Yeah.
We do not have anywhere near the national average of breast cancer in our clinic population.
Right.
So, you know, we are lowering the risk of cancers. But once a woman has a cancer, there are estrogens that will feed a breast cancer. There are estrogens that breast cancers can't metabolize. Mm-hmm. And so we will use one of those estrogens that the tumor can't use to help with some of the symptoms. So we can improve their bladder symptoms, improve their skin, improve their bone health. There's a lot of things we can do that will not increase their risk of cancer reoccurrence.
Yeah.
And in fact,
but
we'll
have a beneficial effect on
absolutely.
Bone and skin, as you just said.
Well, on bone and skin and brain and general well-being, yes. So there's a lot we can do to the people that have had or even have a breast cancer. There's, for instance, a combination of using that estrogen blocker with a testosterone supplement. There's a paper that shows dramatic improvement in the menopausal symptoms that these women experience when they had high dose testosterone with the estrogen blocker.
You know, you could go the NIH website. It's public data. There's no proprietary to this. Dr. Rebecca Glazer has worked extensively. In fact, she was a breast surgeon and now deals exclusively in breast cancer patients. And she has written extensively about the use of testosterone in breast cancer women, not only for treatment of menopausal symptoms, but also to reduce recurrence of breast cancer. And then depending upon what type of cancer your daughter had, if you talk to some other oncologists, radiologists, they have opinions about the use and the duration of use of estrogen blockers. Mm-hmm. So where we don't interfere with what the specialists are saying right now, we do ask our patients to ask the right questions, and they come back with very interesting information.
Yep.
That's interesting. Yeah. I think she's taking aromatase.
Aromatase
inhibitor.
Yes.
The drug is called Arimidex.
Blocker.
Yeah. Arimidex, which is an aromatase inhibitor, and it prevents the conversion of testosterone into estrogen. The problem is that breast cancer usually occurs as women's estrogen levels are dropping.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We really are starting to think that most women's breast cancer is an estrogen deficiency disease. What happens is some of the breast tissue undergoes a mutation that allows it to make its own growth factors and its own estrogen.
Mm.
And what we really need to do is to block the estrogen production within the tumor. But we don't have a drug that just does that. So our only option to turn off the production in the tumor is to block all the estrogen in her whole body.
Mm-hmm.
But that has a lot of adverse effects. What we really want to do is get rid of the estrogen in the tumor, not the rest of her body.
Mm-hmm. I see.
But there are ways, for instance, to give her the other hormones she needs while blocking the production of the estrogen.
Mm-hmm.
And there mm-hmm. are estrogens that can be used that the tumors can't use. Okay, so we deal with this a fair bit.
I shall pass along to her. Maybe I'll enroll her, be able to enroll her, and take advantage of your treatment.
Mm. Yes,
we'll do what we can do.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Thank you for your call, Richard.
Thank you so much for calling.
Recently, completely unrelated, but a 70-year-old patient of mine, we had to take her off of her estrogen for a little while. And she called me the other day and she said, you know what? I can't find my words anymore.
Mm.
Yeah.
And she said, put me back.
Yes, put me back on.
Yeah.
Well, it's true. Verbal ability.
Yeah.
Women have better verbal ability than men.
Yeah.
I think we're just smarter. But go ahead.
Certainly.
Yeah, I think we'd all agree, Dr. Umat.
Every woman in this
room. I'm not a doctor, but I'll agree with the two women doctors. Yeah, and Dr. Mixon.
And men do not have as much verbal facility as women do. It's just, it's a fact of life. And part of that is because the estrogen effect on the brain enhances those parts of the brain. On the other hand, Laura, we men see motion and trajectories and have better spatial orientation. We know where we are in the world better than women do.
Mm-hmm.
So two different types of brain that are wired differently, that respond to different hormones, and each has benefits and each has downsides. And of course, together we make a pretty good team.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. How many of us ask for directions? Okay. We're going to go to Napa Vine now. Chris is on the line. We'll get Chris's question, take a break, and then we'll be right back. Hi, Chris. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Chris.
Hello, thank you. I had a question regarding something that you stated in the past a few times in regards to triglycerides. Now, my question is this. You were talking about fish oil and that you got to be careful taking too much fish oil because you raise your blood triglycerides.
Right.
And I'm confused about this because one of the things that I take is what's called MCTs, which are medium-chain triglycerides.
Right.
Now, one of the things I read about medium-chain triglycerides, they will actually infuse it intravenously in people mm-hmm. for varied reasons. So, and then another thing that happened to me many years ago, before I had a blood test, a lipid profile, I took a protein shake that I added flaxseed oil, and when I got my my blood triglycerides were over 400. So the point being, what is the problem with it? I don't see the issue. So explain to me what the problem is with high triglycerides, if they indeed infuse them, and that if a flaxseed oil will increase it.
Okay.
All right.
We'll do that very thing, but you hear the music, we got to take a break.
Yep.
But we'll be back.
It'll be a quick break, and we'll be back with more of your Leading Edge Medicine. Stay close.
Mr. Sandman, bring me a dream. Make him the cutest that I've ever seen. Give him two lips like roses and clover.
I like this one.
I do too.
And tell him that so his lonesome
nights. Welcome back. It's Leading Edge Medicine. I'm Lynette in the studio with three amazing doctors today. The studio is packed. Dr. Jerry Mixon here with Dr. Umat and Dr. Jimenez from our Tacoma Longevity Clinic as well. Okay, so talking about too much fish oil, triglycerides, we have Chris on the line.
Okay.
Let's find out.
The concern with the triglycerides is that statistically, if your triglyceride levels in your blood are too high, you have an increased risk of cardiovascular disasters, mm-hmm. heart attacks, and strokes. So we would, you know, prefer not to do things that raise those risks. Mm-hmm. There's also, when it comes to the supplement use, and the reason I have warned people about high use is that I sell Relief Factor. I own that company, and Relief Factor has a high dose omega-3. Because of that, I have to adhere to the Food and Drug Administration legal guidelines. And the legal guidelines by the FDA are that you cannot recommend that people take more than 3,000 milligrams of omega-3s per day.
Wow.
Due to the risk of rising triglycerides, which in turn has a statistically significant connection to the increased risk of heart attacks and strokes. And that's the, you know, that's why I, whenever people are asking me about Relief Factor, et cetera, I say not more than three packets a day most of the time. On the other hand, I have also pointed out that when I do something really stupid, which I am prone to do as a high testosterone male.
And jumping out of a plane onto a glacier. Yeah,
and hurt myself, then I increase my Relief Factor to four packets a day for a few days, recognizing I might boost my triglycerides a bit for a few days, but I'd rather get rid of the pain and take whatever modest risk I have from 4 days of an elevated triglyceride. So, you know, life is trade-offs.
Right.
And that's one that I make when I do something foolish myself. However, I cannot officially recommend that anyone else do it.
There you go.
Because I don't want to get into a multi-million dollar argument with the federal government, who can afford a lot more lawyers than I can. Mm-hmm. So.
And you were talking about how, you know, there's a lot of things that are affected by this, and it depends on the type of fats you eat,
yes.
the quality of the fats.
And your genome.
Yes.
And you know, it's, although we talk about the cardiovascular tree, it affects a lot of different parts of your body as well.
Yes, it does.
Your pancreas, your brain, your kidneys, you know, it's all connected at the end of the day.
It's one body.
Yeah.
But again, getting back to the genetic, again, the Inuit peoples, the people that, whose ancestors went up to Alaska and so on, you know, thousands of years ago, because they had a high fat, high blubber diet, because their primary prey animals were things like walruses and seals, they developed a genetic capacity to eat vast amounts of fat.
Right.
As their primary calorie source, and have very, very low risk of cardiovascular disease as a consequence.
Maybe in those days, because they were still working out, hunting, gathering.
And it was cold.
And it was cold.
Yes.
And now you move, you know, you change the
diet.
The diet, but also now they're not working as hard and they're not as cold. Now the risk will go up.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, you're no longer, you know, sleeping in an igloo. You now are in a house with heat, and it makes a difference, yeah. So, yeah, it depends on your genetic components. It depends on your diet. It depends on your activity. There's a lot of things.
Yeah.
When you hear rules and guidelines being made, they're just that. They're guidelines.
Mm-hmm.
These are things that fit most of the people, most of the time.
Yeah, and medium chain triglycerides.
When you say the federal government's involved, there's the disconnect right there.
Yeah, but they regulate anything that gets sold across state lines. Is, you know, falls now into the federal purview, and you have to follow their guidelines when you're speaking as the owner of a company that makes something.
No, but Jerry, even then, you know, medium chain triglycerides do increase cholesterol level.
They
and
do.
High cholesterol level is associated with coronary artery disease.
Right.
Now, not all cholesterol is bad. We recognize that and we understand that.
Yes. Yeah. But there's also the fact that if you are in early Alzheimer's disease.
Yeah.
The medium-chain triglycerides will improve your cognitive
function. They impact
and so it's a trade-off.
Brain, yes.
You got a disease that's killing your brain.
Yeah.
Do you take something that lets you think better, at least for you know 6 months or a year, or do you worry about it causing a stroke or a heart attack? Well, if my brain is going, I want to maintain as long as I can. So medium-chain triglycerides, yeah, hook me up. Give me all I can get.
Right.
But yeah,
you say the cholesterol paradigm, I think, needs to be rethought. I think it is being rethought. It's more the inflammatory, which was mentioned previously.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the inflammation that damages the cholesterol.
Right.
That causes the problem. But one way to approach it, and the way that they started doing in the late 50s and early 60s, was to say, well, if you have less cholesterol to be damaged, we can lower your risk of heart attacks. And that's true. But if you have less inflammation to damage the cholesterol, you also lower the risk of heart attacks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so you can approach it from either sides or both.
Yeah.
They introduced the seed oils into the diet, and that increased significantly the inflammation in the cardiovascular system.
That's right.
Yes, and the omega-6s increase inflammation.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and you know, most Americans have way too much omega-6 in their diet and not nearly enough omega-3.
Mm-hmm.
So we are suggesting that the average person with an average American diet take an aggressive approach towards omega-3s. You know, that, and in our clinic, we can actually measure the amount of omega-3s and omega-6 in your bloodstream.
And how much inflammation is in your arteries.
And how much inflammation is in your arteries. And how much plaque is in your arteries. Mm-hmm. So, you know, our patients get followed closely.
Mm-hmm.
And so we minimize their risks and maximize their benefits. But if they're not our patients, well, there's not much we can do about them. Mm-hmm. You know, people do what they want to do.
There you go. Hey, Chris, we've got some more callers we need to get to, okay?
Well, can you just, I just want to know if I want to find out about your clinic and the pricing structure, is that all available online?
No.
Nope, but you can get come in for a free health analysis appointment, and then you can find out more
and get some details. We'll give you all the information, and that first visit is a freebie.
Yep.
Thank you. All right.
Oh, you bet. Thank you, Chris. And by the way, if you two are listening and would like to get in for your free health analysis, the number is 866-86-YOUNG. You can also go to our clinic at LM or online to lmclinic.com. Make your appointment there. Come on in for the two free tests, the blood test and the in-body test, and we can get you started and find out what all these numbers are, what they mean to you, and get you started getting you healthier. All right. We'll talk more about that in just a moment. Let's take another call. We have James on the line calling from the Philippines. Hi there, James.
Hello, James.
Hey, good morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good morning.
How can we help, sir?
Hey, I spoke to you all extensively, I think, back in about October, about becoming a patient client there and followed up with that. I actually joined the clinic and Dr. Clinton is my doc. I think Dr. Umad knows a little bit about the situation that happened with me. I was one who was going to the Philippines.
Yep.
I did go.
Uh-huh.
We moved there and talked about how to get the medications and all that. So I got over there. I loved it. Had the one loved the Philippines, but testosterone I was already on. But the we added some Ormolin to that mix, and all of that was going great. And I was having these fantastic workouts, doing real high intensity training. For my age, I was pushing my heart rate up probably for 10-plus minutes up into the 150s. Of course, my max is around 156. But one of the things I was really benefiting from, I thought, was one of those push-pull sleds that I was doing at the end of my high-incline walking. So anyway, short story on that was started having some heart palpitations. I always felt great during the workout. Then I was having those issues hours after. Unfortunately, I was probably consuming too much caffeine as well during the day, but really serious heart palpitations. Then one night, I could just feel things just getting kind of weird. And so I used my wife's Apple Watch to check my EKG, sent it to my brother, who's a doctor back in North Carolina. He said, you better get your butt in, get checked ASAP. So we did all that. And that kind of brings you to the point, you know, if you see three different cardiologists, you get three different opinions. So I went from being initially diagnosed with, you know, it all has to do with whoever did the echocardiogram. They said you were down to 47% ejection rate. You're having left ventricle failure. You probably had a heart attack a month or so ago. Of course, this is at a provincial doctor. So I said, well, I better get my butt up to Manila and on back to the States to get checked because that's what he suggested. And I did angiogram up in Manila. That came out much less serious. Plus, I'd gone to the ER because I was having severe chest issues and chest pains, difficulty breathing. It turned out I had costochondritis. Which I never heard of before, but that inflammation of all that cartilage and stuff around your ribs and breastbone all coinciding in the perfect storm with all this going on. So I thought I was freaking dying at that point.
That could be scary.
So, So it all came out, and then they said your ejection rate's fine. You're at 61%. There's nothing wrong with your heart, but you do have it's described as a toric aneuritic bend. And at that bend, I guess on the other side of it, it was in my left left anterior descending artery. And just at the other end of that bend and toric twist or whatever, it's causing some blockage. Guy in Philippines had me at 50-55%, made it back here, or made it back to Bellingham, got checked out. And so that was down. She said she thought it was about 40%. You know, or somewhere in the mid-40s if it was any higher than that. So my question to you all, I had to come off of everything at first, but I really didn't come off the testosterone. I just quit the Somerlin at the time. The stock here wants me on Lipitor, so I'm at least following the advice, because she said that will prevent that issue from becoming worse, and it might actually clean it out, put me on 20 milligrams. Doc in the Philippines had me on Crestor at 10 milligrams. It made me dizzy, so I quit it after the first week anyway. The other one is kind of an interesting drug. I don't know what y'all thought about it. It's called TMZ, or trimetazine, I think. It's a European drug, and it's actually a PED on the Olympics list because it increases blood oxygen to your oxygen flow to your heart and to other parts, so does improve athletic performance. And I know Life Extension did a pretty good article on it about the one heart drug you never heard of. So I'm on that. And then the cardiologist here was worried about me being on testosterone or Somerlin. So I wanted to get your opinion on that.
Well, statistically, testosterone lowers the risk of death from cardiac events better than statins. So I generally, use PDE5 inhibitors and testosterone in the vast majority of my men just because I like the lower risk of death. But, there are people that seem to have seen some different studies than we've seen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, why don't we take a quick break here and then we'll be right back. And a couple more phone callers if we can get them in. Stay right there, James. We're going to take a quick break, and Leading Edge Medicine continues after this.
Everybody's going out and having fun. I'm just a fool for staying home and having none. I can't get over how she set me free. Oh, lonesome me.
And we're back. It's Leading Edge Medicine. Good morning, almost good afternoon. About 9 minutes left of our show today. And we're talking with James on the line, calling in from the Philippines. And doctors, what do you think?
Yeah. Hey, James, thanks for calling in. Actually, you're right. I have been following very closely with Dr. Pentland. A lot of credit to him. He's taken very good care of you. And I'm really grateful you're doing so well. I will admit I was a little worried when I first heard.
Yeah, I was too.
Yeah, no kidding. But so glad glad that you're okay. So thank you for the follow-up call. I completely agree with Dr. Mixon that testosterone does not cause any cardiovascular disease. In fact, most of the literature suggests the opposite. Yeah. I think it's a fear factor with regular cardiologists. Don't know, and they're scared that it might cause a problem for you, and that's why they recommend that you come off of it.
Yes, I was surprised because she's like probably in her 40s. I expect her to be better up to date.
The problem is that testosterone is considered a urologist's drug, and cardiologists only write cardiologist drugs.
Yeah.
But the reality is that men with high risk of cardiovascular death have profoundly better survivals on testosterone than they do on statins. And the testosterone and the statins together work better than either one alone.
Yeah. So, and if you're in Bellingham and you're local, you know, come and talk to Dr. Pentland, and I'll let him know that you had called. We can give you multiple references to support that data.
Yeah. And we can give you copies of a lot of papers that you could even show your cardiologist if you'd like.
Yeah, I think he's going to send that to me. I was actually there last week and saw him. Life in paradise. So.
I don't blame you. We'll send it to you, though. Now, with regards to the nitric oxide, certainly, definitely agree with you. And we would encourage that. In fact, that improves blood flow. We do measure levels in the clinic, and it's a simple strip test. But if you're not here and we can't do that, I would still encourage you to use anything that increases nitric oxide production and vasodilates. In the office, we also prescribe PDE5 inhibitors for that purpose because it increases microcirculation. Okay. There are certain supplements that are available over the counter, like Neo4D and Arteriosol and Vasconex, so many others that will also do the same thing, and they do support that with literature review. So taking anything like that, I'd only be careful about dropping the blood pressure too low. I think that's okay. And then your last question was about Lipitor. Given that they found an abnormality on the scan, I actually think it's okay to stay on a little low dose Lipitor at this time. I would add CoQ10 for you. Yeah, I think that's fine. I would give you a CoQ10 and just to prevent any side effects of the Lipitor, and you know, multiple nutrients are our basic six, like with multivitamins and minerals. Those are just very good nutrients to be on a regular basis.
Okay. Sounds good.
And watch, and Pentland would watch your sugars very carefully. Remember, Lipitor does increase the risk for hyperglycemia with long-term use, but we'll do other things to help mitigate that.
Okay. Sounds good.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you all for your time. Appreciate it.
All right. You're welcome. Yeah, take care.
Thank you for calling, James.
And good luck. Yeah.
Yes. And we have one caller left. Jean calling in from Bellevue. Hi, Jean. Let's see if we can get to your question.
Hello, Jean.
Hi. I have inflammation in my feet, ankles, and my legs. And I'm trying to watch my sugar and salt.
Okay.
And what else can I do?
With the last 2 minutes of the program.
Is it swelling or pain or what is it? What is it?
A swelling, no pain.
Okay.
Is it new?
I've had it for some time.
Do you have any shortness of breath when you lay down?
No.
Okay. When I see a woman in midlife with swelling in her feet and ankles and legs, first thing I worry about is heart, which is why they were asking about shortness of breath. It's congestive heart failure is common in women over 50.
Yeah.
Second thing we worry about are kidneys. So we want to make sure that your glomerular filtration rate is okay and your creatinine is nice and low. And the third thing we worry about is obstructive lesions in the pelvis. So uterine, ovarian cancers, that sort of thing. So in that order is where we do the workup. So we look at heart, we look at kidneys, we look at pelvis. You know, if all three of those are fine, then we've ruled out all the really dangerous and worrisome ones. then we can start looking for the other sorts of stuff. Stasis problems, varicose veins, you know, activity, dietary indiscretions, those sorts of things. But if heart, kidneys, and pelvis are all right, then we at least take our time and relax because you're not going to die from them. But as the guy on the radio, I can't work those up.
Right. I am on heart medication.
Okay. So that, you know, again, that then skews my suspicion towards cardiovascular.
Mm-hmm.
What heart medicine are you on?
Toprol XL.
Toprol. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, Toprol, if anything, would tend to make the swelling worse. It's a beta blocker.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So you might want to talk to your doctor, you know, did this, if the swelling started after you started the Toprol, then you might need to adjust that dose. Of course, if it started before the Toprol, then it's not the Toprol. All right,
okay,
my dear, I'm afraid we're out of time. They're going to make us go away. I've only bought 4 hours today, and
there we go.
I've used them all.
Thank you very much.
Oh, you bet, Gene. I hope you get some answers with your doctor. Well, that's it. Wow, what a show. Thank you so much, Dr. Jimenez, for coming in.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Yes, yes, and we will have you again real soon, I'm sure. Dr. Umat and Dr. Mixon, we will be back live in the studio next weekend. You have a terrific rest of your weekend. And if you'd like to know more about us and what we do, or maybe rehear this broadcast, you can. We post all of our live radio broadcasts as podcasts on our website a few days after they broadcast at lmclinic.com. Have a great week. We'll see you next week right here on Leading Edge Medicine.
The preceding program was paid for by Longevity Medical Clinic and does not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of KPI management and staff.